Good evening. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm happy to be here tonight with y'all. We're supposedly, if you're counting, this is step four, and we may. There's a possibility we may talk about step four tonight. We'll see how that works out. I was reminded of a quote by Albert Einstein, which I'll probably get wrong, but I hope I get the gist of it right. And the quote was something like this. It says, the level and quality of thinking one needs to get him out of a problem and a situation has to be of a much higher quality than the level and quality of thinking that got him in the situation in the first place. It's really a sad thing to watch alcoholics come into Alcoholics Anonymous and try to think their way out of the jam. You ever have that situation where, it's a scary thing because the fourth step sort of like invites thinking, you know? It's a sad thing to watch a guy come into Alcoholics Anonymous and he walks in the room and you sit down with him afterwards and I was thinking of this picture in my mind this afternoon. He sort of dumps this bucket of garbage, you know, after 20, 30 years of ruining his life. You know, if you keep on walking in the direction you're walking, you're probably going to end up where you're headed, you know. And so he's been walking in this single direction for a long period of time, and now he's reaping the benefit of the craziness. And you know, alcoholics are, and it's not only applies to alcoholics. A lot of us, these lines apply to, you know, regular people. We tend to want to do things that are helpful to ourselves, and we're not intentionally trying to sabotage ourselves, although we end up doing it. You know, there was Paul Menninger wrote a book, Man Against Himself, and in the chapter on alcoholism. In referring to alcoholics, it says alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. And very often I'll be involved in litigation because I'm an attorney. I mean, this is absolutely true. And I'll watch a guy, after 25 years of experience of this, I'll watch a guy that I'm litigating against, let's say the party I'm against who's an alcoholic. And I'll tell my client, don't worry, we just have to wait this guy out. He will destroy himself. And I cannot tell you how many times sober, when I mean sober, well, I know he's at home drinking, you know, but I mean in the courtroom, sober, an alcoholic, an individual who's an alcoholic, does incredibly self-destructive, stupid things to destroy themselves over a period of time. It's just, it's almost like a physical law. You just let this guy run over a period of time. He will say the exact wrong thing to the judge. He will testify to the wrong thing. He will do something insanely crazy out of some sort of logic or emotion that feeds into logic where he thinks it's right, which will all of a sudden just kill his taste. So you come into this deal and you sit down with a guy who's dumping this ration of junk on you, you know, this impossible situation on you. You know, all about his wife and his boss and his job and his life and the money and the cats and, you know, it's all sort of wound up together with the family and the this and the that and the other thing and just an impossible situation in the IRS and cancer and everybody's going to die if he doesn't have $1,000 by 3 o'clock in the afternoon and, you know, this whole thing that's going on, and you sort of look at him as he's telling you this, you know, because the arms are moving and the legs are moving and, you know, everything's animated, and you say this, and you say something like this. You say, listen, I know it looks horrible, and I know these things look terrible, and I know this looks like an impossible situation, but let me tell you what the deal is. Your problem's drinking. And if you just don't drink. If you just focus on not drinking, and you go to meetings, and you read the big book, and get a sponsor, it's all going to work out. And you watch as the guy looks at me and says, says those magic words, you don't understand. Because he's absolutely convinced that you're stark, raving, crazy. You know that it's going to work out. You don't even know how it's going to work out. You don't even know what's going to happen. He's saying, you know, I may die as a result of that. He says, yeah, that's possible. I may go to jail. He says, yeah, that's possible too. This may happen. That may happen. He says, yeah, that's all possible. He says, but let me tell you something. If you don't drink and you go to meetings and you do this, I'm telling you, it's going to be great. And he's looking at you like you're from the planet Mars. Because every neuron in his brain that's working, and he's sober now, and he's clicking this off, and he's brilliant, is telling him, my life is over, and this guy doesn't get it. And you, based upon all the experience you have, you're just sort of thinking, without even logically thinking, you're just sort of like at a different level of the deal. And you just somehow know, you don't even have to know. You don't even have to figure it out. You're not even worried about figuring it out. You just know, if he just focuses on this one thing, and the principles it takes to get through this one thing, everything else along the side is collateral, it's all going to sort of work out, and everything's going to be fine. It's going to be perfect. And there's no way you can show it to him. He's using that Alky logic. You know, he's trying to figure this deal out. So this line in the big book, you know, it says the three things that alcoholics have to be absolutely convinced of. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It says, number one, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Two, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And three, God could and would if he were sought. And I want to talk about I want to spend a little time talking about number one, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. You know, that's a very interesting line because I'll tell you what it doesn't say. You know what it doesn't say? It doesn't say that we couldn't stop drinking and we couldn't manage our own lives. It doesn't say we were alcoholic and we drank and our drinking made it such that we could not manage our own lives. What it says is the thing that we have to be convinced of is that we are alcoholics and cannot manage our own lives. So in other words, the thing that I have to swallow is it's not the drinking. The drinking is just the symptom. I got some other symptoms going on, you know? I got symptoms that are going on that have nothing to do with driving while under the influence of alcohol, you know? You know, being unbelievably resentful or angry or fearful, you know, or mad or envious or whatever it is, any type of emotion can ruin you. It can ruin you in the courtroom. It can ruin you it can cause you to make all sorts of horrendous decisions. You know, you just make that phone call when you should have never, like, what was I thinking? You write that letter when you say, you do something. You make a move that you can't take back, and 20 years down the road, a relationship is ruined because you wrote that letter or you said that thing or you did that act where you're saying, why did I do that? It seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, and you, and nobody can stop you. Nobody can stop you. I mean, you don't have to be. Listen, most of the people I hurt in my life, I hurt cold, stone, sober. Many of the people I hurt in my life today, I hurt, you know, in AA the same way I hurt with them before I come to AA. I don't need alcohol to be an idiot or to be a jerk or to do stupid things. And so it says here, it says in our book, it says, and we were alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives. And I got to swallow that deal that as a result of being an alcoholic, I happen to believe in my theology as a result of being a human being. I think this sort of applies to human beings in general, but definitely to alcoholics. I can't manage my own life. I just can't. You know, you want to know something? Life just comes too fast. You remember that video game, you know, those old video games? I'm talking about 25 years ago when computers first came out, the Space Invaders. And they used to, you could shoot these things would come at you and you'd fire rockets at them, and then they'd have more things coming at you, fire rockets, and they have more things, until like there's so many things coming at you, you can't, you know. Listen, to me, life is like Space Invaders to the power of 20, you know. I mean, I can't, life is just way too rough for me. I'll tell you, and you know, listen, I've graduated a lot of schools, I got a lot of diplomas on the walls, I got a lot of stuff going on for me, I'm not an unbright person. And I gotta tell you something, I've lived life 57 years, I can't handle it. I give up. I give up, really. You know, because, you know, you just can't, because it's just too many permutations, too many possibilities, too many phone calls coming in from people I don't know. I mean, you know, Have you guys figured out that you have very limited control over this whole deal? You know, I got a call today from somebody out of the blue asking me to do something that I don't really want to do, that I have to do. You know, I mean, I got to spend some time now on something. Not a big thing, but time now on something that I never anticipated spending time on. But I got to do it because it's done and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other thing. It's a minor thing, but it's something that I got to rearrange my schedule on. You know, I had no control. You know how much control I had over that phone call coming in? Like zero. Can you ever figure out how much control you have over, you know, driving down the street and getting a flat tire or not getting a flat tire or something? I mean, you have so little control of your life. This is like Space Invaders of the bad sort. You know what I mean? It just ain't going to stop. It's going to keep on going. It's a rough deal. I'm an alcoholic. I can't manage this deal. Hey, listen, I tried it. I couldn't do it, so I drank. Made it a little bit easier. Then I made it worse. You know, I mean, I just cannot manage my own life. And yet, I have some old ways of thinking, some old ideas that are going on in my brain. And here's one of the biggest ideas I have. It's the old Roland Hazard idea. And it goes like this. And it's completely opposite of the idea that we have to understand and accept this to our innermost selves, that we are alcoholics and cannot manage our own lives. As a matter of fact, remember that line from the 12 and 12? I read last time, it says, until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic, one of the clear consequences, one of the pertinent consequences and ideas is that you can't manage your own life. You know, like not only are you not in charge, where did you ever get the idea that you were actually in charge of this deal? That like you were doing anything that made a difference except in a bad way. You know, I mean, the fact that, so here's what the line says. It says, unless you're an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. With real happiness, he'll find none at all. So it's not just not drinking. It's accepting the fact that you can't manage your own life. From the time you wake up in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night. And here's the line. Here's the thing that's directly opposite. Directly opposite that way of thinking, which is the thinking I have to accept. You see, there's just levels of thinking in here. It's like you can think like the guy who just came into the room and recount all the obvious problems. You know, the squirrel got out of the cage, the money, the this, the that, the other thing. Or you can think like the old timer who says, yeah, I know all that's happening. The space invaders are coming. We're all going to die. Listen, if you just don't drink and go to meetings, it's all going to work out. You know what I mean? And I can't explain it to him, and he can't explain it to me, except, you know, I've been around for a while, and I know what the deal is. And here's the idea that goes absolutely opposite to that, and it's the most natural way for me to think. See, I think opposite of the way I'm supposed to think, at a level that's lower than the level I have to raise myself up to. And it says this. We read this last week. I'm going to read it again. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. Basically, most of us coming in here. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Then he had gone to Europe, placed himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Young, who prescribed for him. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he believed. This is an old idea that, like, sort of runs naturally in most alcoholics that I deal with. Above all, he believed that he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Then it says right after that, my favorite line, nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. In other words, the idea that he had gotten smart enough or figured out this enough or read enough books, had done enough four steps, had really gotten this thing under the code where he figured this deal out so that he wasn't going to drink anymore. And feeding right into that line is the part in the agnostics where it says, what's the first part of the agnostics? Because this is a corollary to that in my mind, where it says in chapter to the agnostics, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered a long time ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. my whole mind turns on the idea that somehow, some way, there'll be some book, there'll be some idea, there'll be some mentor where I will finally figure this thing out. And I will grab hold of an idea, a concept, or anything but God, anything but that, for that fuzzy deal, okay? It's like, good orderly directions, good enough for me. Sounds good. You know, something I can figure out. Good orderly directions. Sounds like something I figured out. You know, be good. Just be good. Just be good. You know, just do the right thing. How's that? Just do the right thing. Just say no. You know, just, you know, give back the money when you're supposed to. Just always, you know, just always do the right thing. You know, and, you know, what's too hard about that? You don't have to be a space cadet to do that. Well, then how come everybody's drinking? You know, if it's such an easy idea, if it's so easy, if it's such an easy deal, let me ask them, how come only 0.5% make it in 25 years? How come only 1 in 200 makes it? If it's so easy, if that's the deal, then how come nobody gets it in here? If all you got to do is do the right thing, then how come people are hurting people, divorcing people, not paying child support, drinking, drugging, doing all sorts of craziness in here? How come I sit in A meetings while people discuss the craziest things they're doing in their lives? Is it that they haven't heard do the right thing? You know, I mean, is do the right thing just too complicated? You know, no, it's because do the right thing doesn't work for us. It said it right there in the book. It says of a code or a philosophy, you know, you know, I mean, I did all that stuff. I did all that stuff. I think, therefore I am. I feel, therefore I am. Descartes, you know, Berkeley. I did all that philosophical junk, mumbo jumbo. I did all that multivariable calculus, differential equations. I did that all scientific, trying to figure that stuff out, you know, trying to, you know, live sober life based upon brain, you know, brain power. Just never worked for me. Always ended up hurting people and drunk and doing just stupid stuff. You know, I mean, it just doesn't work. So I come in here and you know what I do? I come in here, I read this book. Hey, that's nice. I say to Lord Krishna, hey, that's nice. I listen to all this stuff. I say, hey, that's nice. And then I do whatever I can to try to live my life the way I lived it before I came here, trying to do the right thing or figure out how to do this thing based upon my own brain power. And that's like the old way of thinking. There's something else. Listen, there's something magical going on in A. There's a magic thing going on. There's something going on in A that you're not going to be able to explain by just logic. You know, you're just not going to be able to explain it by using logic. I'm driving in a car. I'm about 8 months sober, and I'm one of these guys. I picked up a white chip, and I'm not bragging. I'm just reporting. I picked up a white chip. In January of 1981, January 17th, 1981, had my last drink. Never found it necessary to have another drink. You know, I mean, I probably did a lot of my slip before I got. I could slip tonight. You know, I mean, nothing special about the deal. It's just, you know, sometimes it happens that way. And I don't try to analyze it. I don't try to figure it out. It has nothing to do with me being smart. I know better or anything like that. It just is what it is. You know, there's a lot of guys with good sobriety that didn't do it that way. But I did. And at the time I got sponsored by Bob Sullivan, there was another guy that he was sponsoring named Bobby. Bobby wasn't as lucky or fortunate or whatever it is as me. And Bobby would pick up a white chip and he'd go for about 30 or 60 days and then he'd drink. And then he'd pick up a white chip, he'd go for 30, 60 days, and then he'd drink. And then he'd pick up a white chip, he'd go for 30, 60 days. It was like Bobby had, he was on a timer. You ever meet guys and he's like, it's getting to that point. What do you mean that point? 60 days. That's my time. You know, 60, he had like a time. I can't remember if it was 30 or 60. It was a certain point, like an egg, you know, like he'd get done and then he'd go out, you know, and that deal. And you know, I'm sort of watching this stuff going on, you know, and Bobby was working for Bob, my sponsor, down at Mark Motors, you know, and what would happen is we'd drive up to Bark here and pick up Bobby. He'd somehow wind up in Fort Lauderdale, and he'd say what people say after they drink, say, oh, I'm sorry, he was remorseful. He'll say, this time it's going to be different. You know, this time it's going to change. And Bob would say, hey, no problem. He'd go down, he'd get him a new suit of clothes, give him a few bucks, you know, he'd take him to meetings, and Bobby would do great for about 30 days or 60 days or whatever it was, and then he'd be out drinking, he'd disappear, he'd go out drinking again. And then we'd go up to Bark, and we'd pick him up, and my sponsor would go up to Bark and pick him up, and then we'd go through the same process over and over and over again. Now, while this is going on, I'm like watching, I'm not exactly in a coma, I'm watching what's going on. I'm like staying sober and I'm going to meetings and I'm watching this guy, you know, who is obviously full of crap. I mean, you know, I can mathematically prove to you he's full of shit. You know, how's that? You know, I mean, I don't know what I could, I tell you. I mean, it was clear to me. You didn't have to be a brain search and understand that this guy was saying he was going to do one thing. He ended up doing another thing. And he was really sort of like taking advantage of my sponsor when you think about it. Because my sponsor was doling out money and he was helping him out and he was picking him up and he was doing all this stuff. And then he'd go out and drink again and he was like taking advantage of my sponsor. My sponsor only had 15 years. He didn't realize it. And, you know, it was pretty clear to me, you know, I realized that I understood what was going on and I was feeling really bad for my sponsor. You know, here's this guy. He's full of crap. He's hurting my sponsor. You know, my sponsor doesn't know about it. He's being taken advantage of. And, you know, so one time we were driving up to Bark on the 18,000th time to pick this guy up. And I was finally ready because I was really disgusted. This was really eating me up. You know, this was happening right in front of me to my sponsor. This guy taking advantage of him. He was going to pick him up. And I said, and I just lowered the boom on my sponsor, you know, to help him out. I said, I don't understand what you're doing. And, you know, I said, you know, I'm giving one of the greatest closing arguments of my life. I had all the evidence piled up on 3x5 cards, you know. I mean, I'm going, the guy, you know, I'm giving the dates, the times, the place. He said it last time. He said it the time before. He said it the time before. You do this, and then he doesn't care. And then he goes out and he drinks again. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about AA. He's a phony. He doesn't give a crap about anything. He's just using you. Your name, I used every... And you know something? I was right. I was so right. I was like Alky right. Like, if you disagree with me, you gotta die, you know, because you're so stupid, you know? And yeah, I was just that. You ever been that right where, you know, people shouldn't even have the right to disagree with you, you know? They gotta be shot because they're just stupid to disagree with you. And I was just saying, you know, this guy's it. And I do this whole major forceful, what do they call it, like a juggernaut argument, you know? You ought to drop this guy. You ought to never talk to him again. You ought to, you know, teach him a lesson. You know, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about anybody. And that's it. And that's all I have to say. You know, that was it. And, you know, he was looking at me while I'm making this argument. And, you know, then I finally stopped talking after repeating myself 10 times. But, you know, I hadn't really stopped. You ever have one of those alky brains? Like, once you're on a roll, like, you know, you stop talking, but there's still a discussion going on in... Like, your brain's not ready to stop. Your mouth has stopped, but the brain, you're still talking with, you're still carrying on the argument with somebody, some imaginary creature in your brain. Like, your lips are moving, but you're not saying anything, you know? And he was watching me, and he said, he looked at me, and this is what he said. He says, are you done? So, are you done, Russell? I said, yeah, I'm done. I said, well, you know, I'm waiting, like, how can he answer me? There was no way. You see, there was no way. There was no way he could answer me because factually I was right. I mean, I was so right. This guy had done everything I said I had done. So there was no way he could come back to me and say, you're wrong. So I was just waiting to hear what he was going to say. I mean, what more could he say except I'm turning the car around. You're right. You know what I mean? And he looked at me. He says, are you done, Russell? And I said, yes, I'm done. He says, I want you to listen to me. I said, what? He says, are you going to listen to me? I said, what? He says, you're going to listen? He says, what? 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 What is it? He says, no, Russell. I said, he says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. That's all he said. He said, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. He says, I know, but it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. He was like at a different level. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he was in Greensboro. I was in Miami. We were on different planets. Like, he was on Earth, I was on Mars, you know what I mean? There was a different deal. It had nothing to do with logic. I was working the logic, he was working the AA magic. You know, magic trumps logic every time. He was working at a level of knowing. You know in the big book what it says? It says this line. It says, where it talks about what these guys had going for them. On page 26, it says, the great fact, he says, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence which we had not even dreamed. Now listen to me. That ain't logical. That's what we call experiential. That's something they experience. I can't explain to you logically the fourth dimension of existence. You know, there are some people that I'll read this to her. We have found much of heaven. We have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. There are some people that I'll talk to in AA about this, and they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Did you know that? It'll be as real to them as, you know, this table. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. Do you believe that? I mean, they're explaining something to you. They're saying, this is the great fact to us. Something has happened to us. Something has happened to me. I'm telling you something. Something's happened to me. You know, whether you believe it or not, it's not really important to me. You need to understand something. Something's happened to me, which may happen to you. Maybe it's already happened to you. Maybe it will never happen to you. But that has nothing to do with whether or not it's happened to me. We have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life. See, at 8 months sober, I looked at Bobby's not going to meetings and drinking and failing constantly and putting my sponsor. I looked at it one way with a certain attitude. My sponsor looked at it a totally different way. Towards a whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. And there's nothing in there that has anything to do with logic. There's nothing in there. Listen, they don't teach that. Listen, I went to university. I went to postgraduate work. Let me tell you something. There is no university course that teaches this stuff. There's nothing that teaches this stuff. This, you know, so I guess it's not taught in the university. I guess it's not important. Except I've seen a lot of people who have PhDs come in here and die of alcoholism. And I've seen a lot of guys that don't have a degree at all stay sober for 25, 30 years. Because the level of thinking that Albert Einstein was talking about, the kind of level that it takes to get here, has nothing to do with having a university degree. I told my sponsor, I told him about all the degrees I had. He said, so do rectal thermometers. You know what they do with those? You know, really? So he looks at me and he says that thing. He says, it doesn't bother me. How? And I'm looking at him and I'm saying, how could it not bother you when everything bothers me? Everything bothers me and nothing bothers you. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I am convinced every bone in my body tells me that somehow I can figure this thing out so that one day, using my brain power, I will get to the point where things won't bother me. And the more I try to figure out and do and stretch and push and exercise mentally and learn and read self-help books, the more I try to figure out how to get to the point so that things won't bother me, the more botherable I get. Because I don't get it. Because I haven't accepted that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. That no human power can relieve my alcoholism. That only God can and will if he sought. I don't get it. And you want something? I don't even want to get it. Because I want to do it my way. I want to keep on doing it my way. You know, I'll mouth the words I believe in God and I believe everything they're saying here, but I don't really believe it. You know, when I'm on the phone 8 years down the road, 8 years down the road, 8 years sober, and I'm telling my sponsor everything my wife did to tick me off and how crazy she is, and I catalog for him everything my wife does and how she acts and how she talks and how she is, you know, after marrying her for 8 years, and anybody with half a brain would say that this woman and the way she acts is totally unacceptable. Unacceptable. And I get done talking to Joe Snyder, and I finish up after 20 minutes of cataloging my bill of indictment against my wife, and he says to me, well, you understand why you're upset, don't you? And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you know why you're upset, don't you? And I said, well, of course I know why I'm upset. He says, well, why are you upset? I said, Joe, I just was on the phone for 20 minutes. I told you about 15 things that she did was totally outrageous. You know, I think I know why I'm upset. He says, well, that's not why you're upset. I said, Here it comes. You know the magic's about to come. You know that other level, you know, that 14th level of existence, you know, whatever the thing is, the fourth heaven or whatever the deal is coming at you. He says, that's not why you're upset. I said, what do you mean that's not why I'm upset? He said, that's not why you're upset. I said, you mean all those things I told you my wife did, that's not why I'm upset? He says, no, that's not why you're upset. And then he just shut up. Because you know why? He knew that if he told me why I was upset, you know what I'd say? I'd say, you're wrong. That's what I would say. I would say, you're wrong. Because I'm an alcoholic. I don't believe in anything except myself. And the first thing I'm going to say without even thinking about it is I'm going to say, you're wrong. I'm going to hit it away like a tennis ball. You know, I'm not even going to think about what you're saying because I'm so locked into my old way of thinking. So he didn't say anything. He made me beg for it. He shut up. He says, I said, that's not why I'm upset. He said, no. So I said, are you going to tell me why I'm upset? He says, you know why I'm upset? He says, sure. Well, are you going to tell me? You really want to know? He says, well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? And then he said this. He said, I'll never forget. He said, listen, stupid. He said, listen, stupid. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. I'm married 25 years. From the 8 years sober when I was talking to him to the 25th year. I don't even know. I haven't done, what is that, 17 more years? My wife hasn't changed. I think she's still doing the same stuff. I'm not sure. Because you want to know something? I don't really notice it. Because most of the time when it happens, if I notice it, it really doesn't bother me anymore. And the truth of the matter is most of the time I don't even notice it. Because my self-esteem and myself and who I am really has nothing to do with how my wife acts. You know? My wife may act some way in front of some other people and say something, do something, and I'm all bent out of shape. Because you know why? Because I think that has something to do with me. See, I used to think, well, if she's doing this, what are they going to think of me? Because I used to do all that stuff. But you see, when your self-esteem has nothing to do with what you think other people are thinking about you, which is a losing game. When your self-esteem is not held hostage by other people's thoughts, you know, which is really a lack of freedom. You know, when you don't think that way, you know, when your self-esteem and who you are and what you are is built upon the rock of your relationship with the God of your understanding, and nobody can really take that away, then how my wife acts as a reflection of her has no reflection on me. The only thing that's a reflection on me is how I react. The only thing that's a reflection of me on life is how I react. You know, react because I'm prideful or I'm angry or, you know, whatever it is. It's how I react. It tells me who I am. Most guys, I'll sponsor guys and I'll talk to them and they think, you know what I do when somebody's talking to me? I don't listen to what they're telling me. I pay very close attention to what, you know what tells me everything about you when you're talking to me? I listen very intently to what you're not saying. That's the most important thing to me, not what you're telling me. The most important thing to me is what you're not saying. Because I see you in a situation, you're not saying certain things that you should be saying. See, I know in a situation, if you're at a certain level, you should be saying certain things. If you're not saying them, that tells me something about you. Not what you're saying to me, what you're not saying. And I can't even explain that deal to you, and I can't even explain how that deal happened to me. You know, it's like thinking outside the box. You ever hear the term thinking outside the box? Like, what do you know? You operate based upon what you know. You live your life based upon what you know. What do you know? You know, here's what the deal is. You know what I found out? I found out you don't know what you don't know. Did you know that? It's true. You don't know what you don't know. One day, I'm drinking, and I cannot envision a life without alcohol. I cannot envision a life without alcohol. Can't envision it. The next day, and I'm in this little box, and inside the little box that I'm in is everything that I know on the planet. And I base all my actions and all my feelings and everything about me and everything about you, everything I do, whether I stay married or I don't stay married, who I get married to, who, what job I take. Every decision I make in my life, I base upon what I know and I think is right, based upon this little box of the things I know. You ever play this game? You ever have this deal happen to you? Somebody says to you, what do you think I ought to do? And they give you a set of circumstances, and you say, well, you ought to quit that job. And then they say, well, there's something I forgot to tell you. You say, what? A, B, C, and D. Oh, well, you didn't tell me that. So, well, now you told me that. You ought to stay in the job. Well, there's something else I didn't tell you. A, B, C, and D. Oh, well, you didn't tell me. You got to quit that job. Says, well, there's something else I didn't tell you. A, B, C, and D. Says, well, no, you got to stay. In other words, every time you get more information, you know, the decision can change. So here I am. I'm in this little box of everything I know on the planet. I'm 31 years old, and I'm in this little box of everything I know on the planet. You know what's outside the box? Everything I don't know. Listen, trust me on this. A lot more outside the box than there is in the box. One day, there's a lot outside the box. One day, you know what happens? It comes crashing through the box. Everything inside the box, you know, based on everything I know inside the box, you know what I know? I know I can't stop drinking. I don't even think about stop drinking. I can't even envision a life without drinking. One day, you know, it comes crashing through the box. Some big hand with an AA book. Bam, comes crashing through the box. I read AA. You know what happens? I read this book. The box gets a little bigger. Bigger box. All of a sudden, it's a week down the road, and guess what? I read this box. Now I got this information. All of a sudden, I can't envision ever drinking again. I go from day one, I can't envision not drinking, a life without drinking. Day seven, I can't envision ever drinking again. So now I'm in a bigger box. I'm in a nice big box where I can't envision life without drinking. And I'm doing all my actions based upon that, right? So you know what's inside this big box of mine? Everything I know. You know what's outside the box? Everything I don't know. Everything outside the box is still bigger than everything inside the box. Maybe 10 years later, somebody busts in with another book or another thing. You understand what I'm saying? Now, this is how I run my life. Now, when you're an alcoholic and you're trying to base your actions and your reactions and how you're going to act and how you're going to feel based upon what you think you know about yourself. And I knew, and most of you in here understand what I'm talking about when I say I knew nothing about what was really going on. It was like what my sponsor said. He said, Russ, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. I thought he was complimenting me, you know what I mean? And I pictured a little doggy family, you know. I figured dogs really knew their, you know, like close to their father, you know. Dogs don't know their father. You know, and this is why this fourth step is so, this is why just the, and even the gleaning of knowledge of the fourth step, along with the fifth step, which we're talking about, is not even close to the point. It's not even that type of knowledge and that sort of way that we do it, although it's so important to clear away the bushes and see that, even that isn't the key that's going to get us to the level, because it's all part of the growth that comes in when the spirit enters in and we just somehow grow to a different level. You know, it's, there was a guy, how many people knew Bud Dunbar? How many people knew? Okay. You know, I was sponsored by Joe Snyder. Joe Snyder was a member of this group. Joe Snyder, although I don't think he was sponsored by Bud, he was very, very close to Bud and he looked up to Bud. A lot of people looked up to Bud. You know, doctors and lawyers and all sorts of Indian chiefs and everything like that. Everybody used to huddle around Bud, and Bud was a very wise man. He was an elder statesman in the Arch Creek group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We'd go to listen to Bud and talk to Bud, and, you know, Bud was a very, very wise guy. You know, to this day, I'm still talking about things that Bud said, and Bud this, and Bud that. So one day, my sponsor comes up to me and says, you know what Bud does for a living? I didn't know what Bud did for a living. Most people don't know. Most of us don't know what we do for a living. Now, every once in a while, I'll mention I'm a lawyer. You'll know some guys are lawyers. You'll know about him. You'll find out about him. But the truth is, most of us don't know what we do for a living because it's really not important, because it has nothing to do with whatever's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, no, I don't know what Bud does for a living. He said, at least this is what my sponsor told me at the time. I was asking, he says he parks cars. He parks cars for a living. You know, I figured like some sort of doctor of philosophy, you know, or like, you know, some sort of priest. He says he parks cars. Joe Snyder, who was my sponsor, you know, was a retired postal worker. My first sponsor, who has to sit at his feet and ask him questions, you know, was a used car salesman. You know, in this deal, in our deal, Alcoholics Anonymous, really degrees don't really mean anything. There's a level, there's a thinking, there's a thing going on, there's a wisdom, there's a state of being, there's a level that you get to that breeds respect and engenders respect and people listen to you that has absolutely nothing to do with what kind of car you drive, how much money you have, or anything like that. It has to do with something intangible. And everybody knows what the deal is, you know. I mean, you don't have to broadcast it. Everybody knows who the go-to person is and what the deal is and what's going on. It's something else other than what the world judges people by. It just really is. We have a whole different type of society in there. And it really isn't built upon knowledge. It's not built upon knowledge or money or whatever it's built upon there. It's built upon a level and a manner of thinking and a way of thinking. It's built upon an attitude and a way of looking at things which you can't even explain. If you tried to explain it to somebody on the outside, if you went outside of these rooms and said, they said, why does everybody talk to him or look up to him? And you tried to explain it, you could say, well, he's got 20 years or 50 years. But that really only partially explains it, because there's some guys like with 20 years that you wouldn't even go near them. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be caught dead in a room with them. You know, there's something else going on. And all this has to do with the transformation. And these are the guys I wanted to hang out with. That's part of it, too. These are the guys that I wanted to hang out with. I was, like, drawn to these people. I don't understand why some people are drawn to these people and some people, you know, can't wait to get out of the room, you know. And I was drawn to these people. And this idea of the fourth step, to me, what was important about the fourth step was not even so much what was actually going on with me, although that was important, I guess. I guess it's important. Actually seeing or not seeing, because, you know, you see a certain part when you're I took a course when I was 18 months sober, and, you know, I saw some stuff and it helped me out, and it was, you know, and I've taken, you know, we continue to take inventory. We continue to do it. We keep on doing it, and I've seen different stuff. What's important about the fourth step to me was the manner in which we look at ourselves, the manner in which we stop looking. You know, it says, there's a great line, I think it's in Matthew 6, it says, don't look at the speck in your brother's eye, look at the beam in yours. I was always, no matter what was going on, I was always ready to tell you who was to blame. I was always ready to explain to you about my life, about my kids, about my job. It was always so clear to me that the problem was outside me. And even if the problem was inside me, I wouldn't have had this problem if it wasn't for you. You know, if you ever got me to the point where I admit, okay, I was wrong, I screwed up, and I have this problem, but I wouldn't have this problem if it wasn't for this. You know what I mean? You got to listen to this. You got to listen to, you know, and the bottom line is I was never capable of completely discounting the entire rest of the world and putting them off the side and looking at myself in the mirror and say, what's really going on here? You know, what's really going on? Because you know what the big book says? It says, I am selfish and self-centered and driven by 100 forms of self-delusion. You know what self-delusion is? It ain't a good thing. They're not saying like you're really smart. It means you are totally self-delusional. It means you are clueless about yourself. It's like being on drugs sober. You don't really even see what's going on. You're so selfish and self-centered. You're mad about things you have no right to be mad at. You think you're selfless and you're not selfish at all. You're self-centered and all you care about is yourself. You're not even thinking about the pain of others. It means you are so out to lunch, it's unbelievable if you're an alcoholic, because you can't, and you, in that state, you cannot manage your own life. Because all you want to talk about is you, and how you feel and how what this is doing to you, you know, and that's all you want to do, and it's their fault. You're so out to lunch, and that's me. That's me. And the idea of the fourth step that I could look at this thing and try to look at this thing in such a way so it said we discount the wrongdoings of others. You know, it wasn't their inventory. Where were we to blame? what's going on with us. You know what's the great thing about that? I can do something. I might be able to do something about me. I can't do anything about you. I can't do anything about you. It happens over a period of time. You know, my sponsor says, he loves this quote from the Bible. He says, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. You know, it's just over a period of years, months and years. You know, people come in here and I feel this way. I say, well, you know, maybe I can get this thing in 3 weeks or 3 years or read the book. If I read it 17 times, I'll do 50,000 fourth steps or something, I'll get smart. I'm like Roland Hazard. You know, now that I know, now that I'm so smart, if I get smart, it's not like that. It's a transformation. It's not knowledge. It's not knowledge that will save you in here. Some of the smartest guys in the world can't make it in here. And guys that are not that, don't seem that, they just make it fine. You know, it has to do with really acceptance and giving up and understanding powerlessness and being willing. And willingness has a lot to do with it. It's a tough deal. And over a period of time, somehow you're transformed and you're changed. And that's how it worked for me. And the fourth step is, listen, you want to know how to do the fourth step? You go to your sponsor, you read the big book. You know, I've never seen anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous who wanted to do the fourth step. This has never happened in AA. It has never happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm willing to bet money that it's never happened that somebody who actually wants to do the fourth step over a period of time, desires to do the fourth step, wants to do it, somehow can't do it. Never happened. You know, unless they're hit by a meteorite or something on the way to doing it, you know, I mean, if you don't want to do it, if you're not really willing, let me tell you something. You will have a million reasons and they'll all sound good to everybody but me, as to why you didn't do it. You know, I couldn't find a pen. I couldn't find a piece of paper. I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. I was interrupted. You'll be able to give me a million reasons. It'll all sound good to you. It'll all be horseshit. You know, you'll be able to do that. Yeah. But if you want to do this, and it'll be like everybody else, you won't get it the first part, and it won't seem right, and it won't feel right, and you don't understand it, it won't be perfect. You'll go through everything everybody else does, that 18 months or the 2 years trying to figure out how to do it, it's not right, trying to do the perfect one, and everything like that. But you'll go to enough meetings, eventually, you know what you'll do? You'll sit down, you'll put pen to paper, and you'll do something. You'll put something down, and you'll do it. Not a big deal. You'll do your first fourth step. We ain't going to publish it. It's not going to be publishable. Nobody cares, you know. You may save it like some people do. I burned it, got rid of it, you know what I mean? And I don't miss it, you know. And it's just setting, you know what you get? You get like a little insight. You get like a, whoa, never saw that before. You'll see like a speck. You'll see like a speck. Now here's the cool thing. When you're totally delusional. You don't understand anything. And you see a speck, it's like the biggest deal in the world. Just a speck is the biggest deal in the world. You'll be talking about it at meetings, how you saw this speck. You couldn't believe it. You thought you were this, and you saw this speck. And now you realize you got this little speck here. It's unbelievable. Of course, you're missing the rest of the universe. You don't even see that. But this is just, you're just on the journey now. Because you see that speck, you're just going to grow a little bit more. Your attitude's going to change a little, line upon line. And, you know, next year, you know what you're going to see? You're going to see, like, another speck. Now I'm 25 years down the road, I got, like, 30 specks. You know what I mean? Like, 300 million to go, right? And each time you get one of these little gifts, these little specks, these little insights, you change a little. And each time you do it, you say, hey, that didn't hurt so bad. Maybe I'll do it, next. And there's always that deal that dogs us, trying to drag me back to my old way of thinking. I don't need to do this stuff. I need to look at myself, you know, get me back into my, if I'm smart enough, if I'm bright enough, if I read enough, you know, I'll figure this thing out and I'll be able to do it myself. And, you know, so that's all I have to say on the fourth step. And next week we'll talk about the fifth step. Thank you.